Hello, I'm Mickey Mickelson. This is number 0570, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0570. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, we remember actress Naya Rivera from Glee, who sadly passed away in a drowning accident last week. We feature a chat from October of 2009. Back then, she was surprised, but then again, not surprised, at the sudden hit that the show was.
I sort of am, but then again, I'm not at the same time. Just because, you know, we were so excited about the project, and every week getting the scripts and reading the storyline, we knew that we had something special. We had a good feeling about it, and so we expected it to be kind of the hit that it is now. It's just really good to know that everyone else enjoys it just as much as we enjoy working on it.
Matthew McGregor, the CEO of 22 Apps. Why is having an app important for business?
There's been this progression over time of what's the next thing? What's the next thing that everyone has to get on? And the reason I believe we're on the cusp of something really cool is because with mobile apps, when somebody downloads a mobile app that they're interested in because of the messenger or the topic or, you know, whatever it is, that app is taking up what's called physical screen real estate on their phone. Like, it's there, like, it's in front of them. And if it's on their phone 24/7 with your branding, then people are going to see it.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter heads to the squared circle with a biography of wrestling legend Andre the Giant called The Eighth Wonder of the World. So if you don't want to get body slammed, brother, you better tune into the Stuff File program. Yeah.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0570, was Mickey Mickelson, a PR specialist with Creative Edge. And Mickey has been responsible for helping to book some of the guests on this very program, which we absolutely appreciate. Thank you very much, Mickey. And thank you for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Remember last week when we started off the show talking about 32-year-old Amber Lynn Giles, whose attempt to shame a barista at a San Diego Starbucks for not serving her because she wasn't wearing a mask, an attempt that completely backfired, by the way, and how when a GoFundMe campaign earned said barista, Lennon Gutierrez, $105,000, Giles said she deserved half of that money and was going to sue? Well, there's an update. Giles, whom I like to call Clueless Klux Karen, noted that hiring a lawyer was too expensive, so she started her own GoFundMe page to raise money. As you can well imagine, she's being mocked. Not only that, but some others have decided to mock her by starting other GoFundMe pages. You know, in some ways, life is just about perfect. Meanwhile, teenagers have been turning mask mandates to their advantage. Some have been putting on masks and donning disguises to look like grandma and grandpa in order to buy booze. Adults caught on to this ingenious grift of wearing a face mask and painting on wrinkles and putting on baggy sweaters and old lady wigs after some teens posted videos of them doing the heist on TikTok. However, likely because of the outsized attention of the hilarious prank, many of those videos have since been deleted or the accounts that posted them have gone private, probably because what they did is technically a crime. The New York Post first broke the story a few days ago after one of the videos of a blonde teen drawing on wrinkles with makeup got 1.5 million views on TikTok. The teen enters a liquor store using a walker and wearing what can only be described as old people clothes and walking out with a bag of alcohol. Okay, here's one thing the kiddies of today don't understand. Back in the day, if you did something nefarious, you basically kept it to yourself without bragging about it. That's how you didn't get caught. Live and learn, kiddies. Live and learn. Neighbors on Occidental Street in North Oakland, California, are at odds with the presence of Bruce, a.k.a. Paco, a.k.a. Peter, a.k.a. Pierre, a.k.a. Abraham. Wow, that's a lot of names. Anyway, Bruce, Paco, Pierre, Peter, Abraham, or whatever name it goes by, is a peacock. While some residents are happy to welcome him, others want him to move on and have lodged a complaint with the city. Said one neighbor, known just as Jesse T, for the past 15 weeks or so, he has screamed relentlessly every day. It literally feels like he is inside my house. The peacock is believed by animal control to be feral, but Dennis Fett of the Peacock Information Center in Minden, Iowa. And seriously, did you actually think there was a Peacock Information Center? Who knew? Anyway, Dennis thinks Bruce, Paco, Peter is providing a service. They're like a watchdog, Fett said. They have keen hearing. The neighbors should count their blessings. Really, Dennis Fett? Or should we just call you Boba? This has got to be the equivalent of someone walking down the street, kicking vehicles just to set off car alarms. Who really wants that going on all day? And finally, a perfect storm may be brewing to strike down the long-maligned 1 cent coin in the United States. Earlier this year, the U.S. Mint cut back on the production of the penny to keep its workers safe amid the COVID-19 pandemic. At the same time, people stopped spending, especially with cash, and word of a coin shortage spread, prompting some stores, such as Kroger, to start rounding their prices to avoid making coin change. Last year, the Mint made more than 7 billion pennies, almost 60% of its total coin production, and each 1 cent coin cost 2 cents to produce, putting the loss at more than $72 million. Still, the Mint has no plans to eliminate the coin. It's been up and running at full capacity since mid-June, and according to spokesman Michael White, about 40% of the coins it has produced since then have been pennies. You know, here in forward-thinking Canada, we came to our senses and stopped minting those puppies way back in 2012. Ah, so long ago. Go ahead, Ben. Say it.
Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
Yeah, from pennies to pandemics, we're always ahead of the curve. Anyway, let's get to our first segment here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? By now you've heard the horrific news that Glee actress Naya Rivera drowned in Lake Piru in California. The 33-year-old went missing while she was out boating and swimming with her 4-year-old son, while her son, Josie, was found unharmed on July 8th, alone in a boat the two had rented. Rivera's body was finally discovered 5 days later. Very early in the run of the show Glee, and also very early in the Stuff File program, we had a chance to talk to the actress who played the role of Santana Lopez, one of the cheerleaders on the show. It was back on Stuff File number 0006 in October of 2009. Here's that conversation now. The show has come flying out of the gate. It's doing so well. And it started off with a sneak preview, a premiere in the summer, and now it's on a regular basis. Are you really surprised by the show's success and the buzz that it's received?
Yeah, I sort of am, but then again, I'm not at the same time. Just because, you know, we were so excited about the project, and every week getting the scripts and reading the storylines, we knew that we had something special, and we had a good feeling about it. And so we expected it to be kind of the hit that it is now, and it's just really good to know that everyone else enjoys it just as much as we enjoy working on it.
You know, everyone likes to pigeonhole shows, and when somebody says, oh, there's a television series that's coming on, and it involves a lot of singing and dancing, people like to look back in history to see what succeeded and what hasn't, and in television, not a lot has. And the first thing that comes up is, uh-oh, it's cop rock again.
Yeah, I hear that all the time. And I, like, didn't even know what cop rock was. And I did my research, and I'm like, this is nothing like Glee. But, yeah, we get a lot of comparisons to things like that. And, you know, the High School Musical question comes up all the time. But I think that people have really had a chance now to see that it is unlike anything that's ever been done before. And just because it does have some of those same elements, you know, singing and dancing in high school, doesn't necessarily make it a hit like High School Musical or a failure like cop rock.
Right.
And I think that you really kind of have to make that judgment for yourself. And I think that they have.
The character you play on the show, as I mentioned, is Santana Lopez. She is one of the cheerleaders. And they're not the nicest girls in the group, the cheerleaders. And I'm just wondering if you've ever come across people like that in your real life.
Yeah, I definitely have. You know, I went to high school just like everyone else, and I had popularity issues with popular girls and whatnot. And yeah, I have, but I draw from that and put that into how I play my character, how I play Santana. And I guess you could say that that was a major blessing.
Does it worry you or concern you? Because, you know, sometimes people have a difficult time when you're out in public dividing an actor from their character. Are you concerned that people might think you're like Santana, which I'm assuming you are not?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not like her. I'm not that rude. I don't think that people would. I'm not concerned with that. I don't think that people would have a problem thinking that I'm like that in real life. I think that, you know, the show as a whole really pokes fun at the stereotypes of high school. I think that people get that. So I don't think that, you know, there isn't going to be any problem distinguishing me from Santana.
A show like Glee, an hour-long comedy, which has a lot of musical elements in it, a lot of production numbers. What's it like putting that show together on a weekly basis? It must be a very tight schedule.
It is. It's very tight, and we do cram a lot into a small amount of time. We have dance rehearsals and pre-records, and not to mention, you know, rehearsing scenes regularly like any other episodic television show. But it takes about 2 to 2.5 weeks to shoot each episode, and it's kind of more fun, I would say, because we do get to spend that extra time with each other learning choreography and singing together, and it's kind of like a bonding experience, so I'm glad it doesn't just fly by.
Now, you've been at this a long time. I understand that your first television show as a regular role was The Royal Family with Red Fox and Della Reese back when you were 5 years old. Did you always know this was something you wanted to do?
Yeah, pretty much. I've always been involved in the entertainment industry. And I've always, you know, been acting and singing, and it was pretty organic and pretty natural, and I feel like, you know, I've just been always doing this, and I'm really good at it, so why not stick with it?
Were you just one of those, when it comes to child actors, there's either the fearless child actor or the precocious child actor. Were you just fearless when you started doing this? I mean, working on a sitcom with a live studio audience and veteran performers, or were you even aware of what you were involved in at that tender age?
Well, I was definitely aware, just because, you know, I would always be running lines with my mom or getting headshots taken. So I was definitely aware of the process of it. And I think that I was pretty fearless, as most kids are at that age, no matter what they're involved in. And I think that's actually awesome. And I wish that I had some of that fearlessness now, being 22, just because it's weird how nerves creep up, you know, when when you're older and you have a sense of how people perceive you. And I wish I didn't have that.
You've made the transition from child actor to adult actress. A lot of people don't have such an easy time. Or let me rephrase that. Did you have an easy time?
In that transition, no, I don't think it's easy. I don't think this business is easy for anyone, really, but especially for someone who's been doing it since they were little, you know. There's always a weird phase when you realize that you're not a cute little kid anymore that's just going to go in and make people smile and feel good. You really have to focus on your craft and really learn how to audition and kind of act all over again. And it takes a lot of self-confidence to do so. So it's awkward, but I'm glad that I got over that hurdle.
People who have followed your career, they followed it mostly in the realm of comedy, and you're working on a comedy now, but you've also had some dramatic roles as well. Most recently, you played a heroin addict on CSI Miami. What was that like?
That was an intense experience. I auditioned and, you know, totally threw myself outside of my box, and, you know, she was initially a prostitute as well, so I went in dressed like a hooker and acted like I got electrocuted and I was high, and not really high, but I acted like I was high, and ended up booking it in on the set. It was such a great experience because I really got great feedback from everyone that worked on the show, and it really it surprised me, and I was impressed with myself that I was able to kind of stretch myself with my acting chops and do that. So I did love drama after that, but I definitely love comedy more than anything.
You are working on a hit show right now. What's it like working with the cast? Have you all gelled together?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're so close. I'm actually on my way to have dinner at Amber. She plays Mercedes at her house with a couple of the other Gleeks. And we always hang out and keep in touch, and I think it's awesome because it's kind of like, along with being on this awesome show, I've gained such good relationships with new people, and it's the best experience I could have ever asked for.
Do you think this could be a long run for you, and are you prepared for that?
You know what? I hope so. I heard that we reached the 1 million download mark on iTunes today. So that seems like good news to me.
Yeah, that's.
And I am prepared. I'm prepared to work, and I hope it lasts for a really long time.
That's the other thing. The show came out in the summer for one episode, the pilot, and then people waited for the new season to start. But already the albums are coming out.
Yeah, they're already, the album for the first season is on pre-order right now, and after every episode, you can go on iTunes and download the songs from that episode, which I think is such a great bonus to the show. And people seem to really be taking on to that formula because, you know, like I said, 1 million downloads.
Well, not only is the show fun, but it is very, very addictive. So congratulations on what will certainly be a long-running hit. I thank you very, very much, Anaya, for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you so much.
And the show Glee did have a long run, lasting 6 seasons, 121 episodes. That was Naya Rivera, who sadly drowned on July 8th in California. It should be noted that Naya was swimming in the lake with her son when their unanchored boat started drifting. She mustered enough energy to get her son back onto the boat, but not enough to save herself. Her body was found 5 days after she went missing. She was just 33 years old. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the CEO of 22 Apps. Plus, Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming up a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. You can find buttons for Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or iHeartRadio right on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. At the In-Town Motel in Norway, Maine, manager Andrew Coombs was not happy when he entered the room rented by Sean Shoemaker and his girlfriend on July 11th, hoping to collect payment and discovering more than 50 large spiders, most of them tarantulas, in plastic boxes. "I booted him," Coombs said. "He must have snuck them in all in at night. We never would have allowed that at our motel." Animal Control Officer Robert Larrabee responded to the motel, and the Maine Warden Service confiscated the arachnids, taking them to a facility for exotic animals in Lewiston. Shoemaker was cited for possession of 3 tarantulas that are illegal in the state. Wait a minute. Just 3? Out of the more than 50? What, the others all had work visas? Meanwhile, still in Maine, officers from the Somerset County Sheriff's Department and the Maine Drug Enforcement Agency searched the apartment of 36-year-old Jessica Hutchins looking for drugs on July 13th, which they found. But according to Sheriff Dale Lancaster, "We also got an alligator out of her home. The 2-foot-long gator was being kept in Rubbermaid tubs, but Lancaster said having an alligator in Maine is illegal without proper permits. Officers seized a total of $12,000 worth of drugs along with the alligator, and Hutchins and several accomplices were charged with a number of drug-related crimes. The gator was moved by the Maine Warden Service." Well, there goes a potential handbag and matching shoes. Police in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, received a report of someone passed out inside their car. When officers arrived, they found their sergeant was already there, passed out in his patrol car, drunk, with an open can of beer between his legs. According to Chief Carl Ritchie, who fired Sergeant Matt Kennard on the spot, "The criminal consequences are consistent with those a non-law enforcement member of our community would be exposed to, and we should not be expected to be treated differently in this circumstance." Well, I mean, he was treated a little differently. He's alive. I'm just saying. 65-year-old Scott Gunbinson called police to report 2 masked Antifa guys in his Loveland, Colorado neighborhood. "I am going out there to confront them," he said. A short time later, police got another call reporting a man in fatigues holding 2 people on the ground at gunpoint. When police arrived, they arrested Gunbinson and confiscated the guns he had on him. The 2 Antifa guys on the ground were wearing surgical-style masks, shorts, and matching polo shirts with the name of the roofing company they both work for. "They were canvassing the neighborhood because of the recent hailstorms," said Loveland Police Lieutenant Bob Schaefer, "and weren't doing anything illegal." One of the unidentified victims is a student at Colorado State University, which issued a statement. "Our student is a young man of color, while the perpetrator is white. Regardless of what investigators learn or reasons the perpetrator gives, we know this. Our student got up Thursday morning, worked out with his team, then showered, dressed, and went to work. Hours later, he was facing a stranger with a gun and hearing police sirens that had been inexplicably called on him." Yeah, that's a fine statement from the university. However, sadly, in the recent environment we're in, it's not particularly inexplicable. I'm guessing that this fall in the U.S., black kids shouldn't even consider going out for Halloween. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, ambulance medics in Australia stopped to pick up dinner at a KFC at 1 a.m., but had to wait at a respectable social distance for two people ahead of them. The medics overheard their order was for food for 20 people, so the ambos passed a tip and the customer's license plate number to police. Officers went to the address where the car was registered and found two people were asleep there and 16 more hiding in the house where they were having a birthday party. Earlier in the week, Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Shane Patton had warned that the warnings were over and signified fines would be levied for violations. For such ridiculous behavior, the 16 were fined a total of, wait for it, $26,000. Wow, that's some birthday party bill. Police in Australia don't play. Yikes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We're in the midst of a revolution when it comes to electronic marketing. First, there were websites. Then companies and entrepreneurs flocked to platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Then came the apps. One company is promising to revolutionize apps. That's 22 Apps. Matthew McGregor is the CEO of 22 Apps, and he joins us via Skype from Abbotsford, BC. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, thank you for having me, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, one of the things I've mentioned several times over the years in talking about revolutions like this is when when websites first came along, every company was told, you got to have a website. And Some companies got websites because they needed to get websites. Some companies got websites because people just kept telling them they needed websites. The same thing happened when people started flocking to Facebook and Instagram and YouTube as business people. Some were there because they needed to be there, and some were there because everyone else was there. So now we're in the world of apps. So I'll ask you that question. Why does someone who does marketing, why do they need an app?
Great question. So one of my clients actually put it this way very recently, where they said, hey Matthew, are mobile apps like the new website? So I can really resonate with what you're talking about. Is there's been this progression over time of what's the next thing? What's the next thing that everyone has to get on? And the reason I believe we're on the cusp of something really cool is because with mobile apps, when somebody downloads a mobile app that they're interested in because of the messenger or the topic or, you know, whatever it is, that app is taking up what's called physical screen real estate on their phone. Like, it's there, like, it's in front of them. And if it's on their phone 24/7 with your branding, then people are going to see it 24/7. Then they'll often feel inclined to check out and see, you know, what's new, see what they can learn. And ultimately, you know, it's going to lead them deeper and deeper and deeper into the opportunity to work with people and businesses. Whereas with like websites and even social media, with social media, you might see somebody you're interested in every now and then. But Facebook has really been limiting how many people can actually see what's really going on there. It's actually gone down to less than 1%. And of course, this is because Facebook now wants you to pay them for people to, you know, participate and for people to see your stuff. And so a lot of people turn to email marketing as well, but that's really gone, you could say, in the gutter with spam rates being higher than ever before. And people are looking for a solution where they can have their own audience on their own platform that they can control. And as well as a side note with mobile apps, you can also send what are called the push notifications, which are the little dings that pop up on the phone and remind people to say, hey, there's a new video, there's a new piece of content, there's a new event happening in your area. It's all these things to bring them back and to engage with them just that much more. So I really believe it's the new website. It's mobile app marketing.
Now, you mentioned the word spam a few moments ago, and
yes.
While I don't believe that everyone who is out there trying to push something or sell something is spam, there is a glut, and it makes me kind of wonder, the situations like being in Times Square or being in downtown Tokyo, and you see all that neon and all that advertising, it's blinding, and somebody could get lost in the shuffle of everything that's out there.
Oh yeah.
Is it not the same way with apps nowadays? If everybody's got an app, they're all fighting for that space that everyone else is fighting for, and it all becomes white noise to some people.
That's an excellent question. You make a good point. So, where I believe is this comes into play is where people when you're putting out an app for your business, just like the same as you would invite somebody to join your mailing list or invite somebody to attend an event, virtual or live, whatever it is, you still have to, get them there in the first place, or at least pique their interest. Though once they're there and their interests are piqued, it's easier to keep them there and easier to engage them more on a consistent basis. It's not like they're just stumbling along your app and saying, oh, this seems like one of millions of apps I better download to my collection. It's more like they have a reason to participate and be there each and every day.
So tell us about 22 apps. And what
sure.
What does the name actually mean? What's the 22 reference?
good question. So I'm actually only 22. So we called it 22 apps as a symbol a bit there. And I kind of got started, you could say, very very young in business. And I believe really strongly with a passion that anyone with a desire to be successful in business really can be successful. And so part of my story is I started another company in the internet marketing space where I built websites and marketing campaigns for people and webinars and virtual events and that sort of stuff. And that business really cash flowed enough to where I was able to say, let's create now with this excess capital a software that can really help impact and transform the businesses and lives of, thousands, potentially even millions of people. So I think it's cool.
One of the things people are concerned about these days is security. And I'm talking about that from
sure.
both ends. So somebody who has an app might be concerned about their security when it comes to their infrastructure and interface. And there's also, on the other side, the users of the app who are overly concerned, or not overly concerned, just generally concerned about
totally.
The idea of being tracked everywhere they go and giving out too much personal information. How do you answer those on both fronts?
Absolutely. So part of what our users can choose to do with our software is they can choose what to enable and what to disable in terms of what they can do with their app and how their data is stored and all this kind of stuff. So we really make sure that it's super flexible both for the business owner and the consumer to say, yep, I'm totally good putting that in or jumping into that on the consumer's perspective, or let's skip that step and go this other way. So we really definitely take that into account. And we're very against deep data tracking that you see a lot of companies employing nowadays, where it tracks you outside of the app and all this kind of stuff. I think that's a little a bit crazy. We're about providing value and creating a valuable experience for the customer.
As someone who, as you mentioned, is only 22 years old, you're one of those young whippersnappers who can do everything
sure.
with apps and everything in the computer world these days. But what about the older Luddites out there? For someone who is looking to get an app, is it easy for them to understand and use it if it's something that's part of their business and they want to move to the next step, but they're not necessarily as computer savvy as someone who is younger?
Absolutely. So I'll answer that in two parts. Number one is In terms of our actual platform, 22 Apps is an app building platform. So instead of hiring a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 team to build your app, you can use our platform and basically just build it visually for a fraction of the cost. Like even a 10-year-old boy or girl could, you know, figure it out. And then some of my clients
a 10-year-old boy or girl could figure it out. That's part of the problem. A 40-year-old might not. That's why I'm asking the question.
Fair enough. What we've also done is we've added templates in there as to make sure it's really, really easy. And a lot of our clients as well who just say even to that, even then, Matthew, I don't really want to touch it. We also offer like done for you setup of the initial round of their app. So we'll just build the whole initial app and basically walk them through like if they have a podcast in the app, for example. Oh, how do you add a new episode every single week when the podcast gets updated and that sort of stuff. So we really take care of the whole front to end customer experience for people there.
And it's really adaptable for whatever business one might have?
Absolutely. We've had people from all sorts of various niches, from the coaching and consulting to health and wellness to relationships to schools to golf. I just had someone get an app for his golfing business as a professional golfer, so that was cool. So it's really all sorts of different niches, and really it's best to explore and, you know, come talk to us and our team and say, hey, is this something that works for me? And, you know, we'll be upfront with you and we'll say, yeah, this definitely a work, or no, maybe it's not best at this time.
Thanks to globalization with the internet, the world is a very small place. As I mentioned in the introduction, you were in Abbotsford, BC.
Yes.
But are your clients literally around the world?
Yeah. Canada, all over Canada, the States, and Europe. We have yet to get someone from Australia or Asia, though we'll get there soon. But yes, all around the world.
And is the name going to stay 22 Apps, or is it going to go to 23 Apps?
It'll stay as 22.
It'll stay as 22 Apps. You have a website, which is 22apps.com. What will people find when they go there?
They can check out how the software works, and there'll be a button to basically get on a product demo or a call to see if it's, you know, the right thing for you and your business.
Matthew, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Peter.
Matthew McGregor, the CEO of 22 Apps. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0570, and you'll find links to Matthew's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is to talk about someone who he's never been confused for, unless they were making a remake of the movie Twins, Stuart Nauman.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much. At least you didn't confuse me with a wrestler of the same height that I am. You know, remember Little Beaver?
Yes.
Well,
but be careful. Well, this is a family show.
I didn't say anything. I'm just saying that there used to be a, you know, a midget wrestler called Little Beaver. And when I used to work for the Suburban newspaper, a few of my colleagues used to be my nickname that a few of my colleagues gave me.
Oh dear.
So yeah. But no Mohawks. That's where I drew the line.
Well, at least they didn't call you the mayor of the Lollipop Guild. I mean, that's it's a step up, literally.
Yes.
Anyway, what are we talking about this week?
Well, in case you couldn't tell, this edition of Book Banter, we're going to talk about pro wrestling. Well, back in the early 70s, Peter, I was an avid watcher of Grand Prix wrestling every Saturday afternoon on Channel 12. And it was a fun weekly showcase of the best and baddest wrestlers at the mat of this Montreal-based wrestling territory. But one of the first wrestlers that I saw in Grand Prix wrestling was a literal giant of a man. He was touted as a native of the town of Grenoble, France, in the heart of the French Alps, who measured at 7'4" and weighed close to 400 pounds. He wrestled under the name of Giant John Ferret and quickly became a superstar with local wrestling fans, whose giant stature and intimidating presence constantly filled the Verdun Auditorium and the Montreal Forum whenever he was part of a Grand Prix bill. Now, by the mid-70s, Giant John Ferret left Grand Prix wrestling and found greener pastures in the U.S. with the WWF. He changed his name to Andre the Giant, found some fame in Hollywood with roles in The $6 Million Man and the cult classic The Princess Bride, and not to mention his quote-unquote feud with Hulk Hogan in 1987 that culminated in the classic showdown at WrestleMania III. But outside the ring, Andre the Giant was a man whose heart was just as big as his height and divulged in many simple pleasures like playing cards backstage with his fellow wrestlers, accompanied by many bottles of beer. If you ever seen a typical beer ball in his hand, it looked like a juice box. But
he had hands that would dwarf catcher's mitts.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, how many catcher's mitts you have to sew together to get one, you know, catcher's mitt for Andre?
Yeah.
I perished a thought. But he was also very supportive of his family and colleagues, and yet his lifelong bout with the disorder, if you excuse I may mispronounce it, is called acromegaly, had Andre constantly wrestling with constant agonizing pain in his knees and back and led to his premature death in 1993 at the age of 46. But the team of Bertrand Hébert and Pat LaProde, who have quickly become much sought-after wrestling experts, have once again applied their wrestling expertise and sports journalism skills to produce a biography on a grand scale that's certainly worthy of a man like Andre the Giant. It's called The Eighth Wonder of the World. And Andre was born Andre Roussimoff, the son of Bulgarian immigrants, in 1946 in the town of Oussy-sur-Marne, France. And even when he was a teenager, young Andre knew that a career in the squared circle was for him and launched his career in his native France in the 1960s. He rounded off the decade with tours in the UK and Japan, where as Monster Roussimoff, he became a superstar with Japanese fans. And then Montreal came next, where he would cement his reputation as an international star in the world of pro wrestling. Now, what I really admired about this book is how Hébert and LaProde's passion for wrestling and their expansive knowledge of the sport really contributes to how thorough and exhaustive they are when it came to telling the story of Andre the Giant. For example, there are separate chapters dedicated to the history of the Japanese and Montreal wrestling scenes and the many promotions that created fierce rivalries that were quite dog-eat-dog, the many nicknames Andre wrestled under, the disputes of his actual height and weight, and also the story behind the disorder acromegaly, which enlarges the human body, especially the head, hands, and feet, which was Andre's claim to fame as well as a major burden to his health and well-being. And also you get detailed behind-the-scenes stories of many of Andre's triumphs and setbacks in the ring. In fact, their detailed retelling of his 1987 feud with Hulk Hogan, from its origins to WrestleMania III, are so dedicated to every minutiae of the events. It took me back to when I originally watched that scenario play out on TV in closed-circuit television 33 years ago. And there's plenty of details about the Andrei Rusimov side of the man. One of my favorites is he was so proud of portraying the role of Fezzik in The Princess Bride, it extended to that he carried a copy with him, of the movie, that is, with him wherever he went on the road so that he could watch it in his hotel room or, you know, invite fellow wrestlers over to watch it in his room as well. So he was really proud of that moment in his career. Now, The Eighth Wonder of the World is a book that deserves a championship belt for telling the story of a much-loved and respected figure in pro wrestling who tragically became a victim of his own body. And as a result, Andrei Rusimov and his alter ego of Andre the Giant can truly be regarded as larger than life.
And he was so big, he made Richard Kyle look like a Charles Atlas before poster.
Yeah. And that was, and he didn't, and plus, Andre never had to wear a set of metal razor sharp teeth to be a star. That's for sure.
Absolutely. The book is called?
It's called The Eighth Wonder of the World, and it's by Pat LaProde and Bertrand Hébert, published by ECW Press, and it's $34.95.
And what other books in this genre do you suggest?
Well, I'm going to pile drive this recommendation. The team of Hébert and LaProde, their first book, which is a detailed history of the Montreal wrestling scene. It's called Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs.
Wow.
Yeah. Great book. I had a lot of fun reading that one. Brought back a lot of memories of all those times spent at the Forum and the Paul Sylvie Arena. Yeah. And also, if you'd like the movie The Princess Bride with Andre as Fezzik, you'll probably want to read the original novel that was written by William Goldman.
Ah, yes.
Yes, quite a book, and shows that there was more to William Goldman than, you know, Marathon Man and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and Magic.
Hmm. So again, this week's book is?
It's called The Eighth Wonder of the World by Bertrand Hébert and Pat LaProde, and it's published by ECW Press, and it's $34.95.
And normally, whose corner will we find you in?
Well, you'll find me in the Montreal Times corner every week, either in print or online. And if you want to go online, you just go to www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
You're welcome. And if you excuse me, I have to speak to Little Beaver and Sky Low Low. It's part of the midget segment on the program.
Yes. Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify and iHeartRadio. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but right now the bell means it's time to check the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
Under the headline of Sometimes the Hype is True, let's look at the most prophetic words ever uttered by Richard Rose as posted to his Facebook page back in April. It states, "Let's make this clear. I'm not buying a mask. I've made it this far by not buying into that damned hype." Well, you know where this is going. A couple of months later, Rose, an Army veteran with tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, tested positive for COVID-19. He died 3 days later, on the 4th of July. "We were blown away, you know," Rose's friend Nick Connolly said. "You hear about this virus and you don't expect it to affect people, younger people like ourselves." Connolly is hurting now that his friend's post has gone viral, and Rose, who was active in veteran homelessness and suicide prevention programs, is getting slaughtered online right now for his decision that he made. Connolly still hopes Rose's death can serve as a warning to others with similar attitudes. "It's horrible that we lost Rick, but the even more tragic part of that is who else became infected because of the actions that he chose." Yeah, sad. But it has to be said, the tree of life is often self-pruning.
I have come for you. I am dead.
Cody Timms has passed his 18th birthday, but he isn't going to return the voter registration application that he got in the mail in Atlanta, Georgia. For one thing, he passed away 12 years ago. For another, he was a cat. The Georgia Secretary of State's office blamed out-of-town activists and said the cat's lack of a state ID would prevent him from voting even if he were alive. Really? That's the takeaway? So if he were alive and still a cat and he had a state ID, he could vote? Okay. Said Cody's owner, Carol Timms, if they're trying to register cats, I'm not sure who else they're trying to register. I'm not sure if they're trying to register dogs, mice, snakes. Really? Dogs, mice, and snakes? Oh, dear Lord. This is just one of the many reasons why I always say that Canada is North America's designated driver. A California man was arrested and ordered held without bond for fraudulently obtaining some $9 million in coronavirus relief funds and using some of the money to gamble in Las Vegas. 40-year-old Andrew Marnell of Los Angeles allegedly submitted a number of fraudulent loan applications in relation to the coronavirus pandemic and obtained millions in Paycheck Protection Program or PPP funds. Prosecutors say he used some of the money to make risky stock market bets and squandered hundreds of thousands of dollars at the Bellagio Hotel and Casino and other gambling establishments in Las Vegas as recently as last weekend. Authorities said Marnell faces up to 30 years in prison on the bank fraud charge. You know, I don't even know why the casinos are open anyway, but I guess there are people like Andrew who are willing to, in this case, literally gamble their life away. A Florida man didn't take too kindly to being asked to wear a face mask at a gift shop. 37-year-old Paul Eli Daniel Duval was at the Theater of the Sea gift shop in Ismorada, Florida, when he was asked by a store employee to put on a face mask. Apparently offended by the request, Duval allegedly showed his disdain by pulling down his shorts and exposing his junk to shop patrons while cussing them out. Monroe County Sheriff's Office spokesman Adam Linhard said Duval spoke vulgarly, particularly to women in the room, including one minor girl, about his genitals, their bodies, and pornography. Witnesses pointed out Duval to cops who spotted him in a parking lot as he was leaving the gift shop. Duval reportedly told cops he exposed himself after employees denied him access to the store's bathroom. He faces charges of indecent exposure, disorderly conduct, and driving with a suspended license, because in these stories they always have a suspended license. Was it really indecent exposure, or was he just asking to use the bathroom in a really rudimentary sign language kind of way? And it really needs to be pointed out that not only was he not wearing a mask, he wasn't wearing underwear either. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
An Arkansas police officer who told a colleague he would shoot through the door any protesters who came to his home has been charged with killing a fellow officer who knocked on his door last month. 33-year-old Calvin Nicholas Salyers is charged with manslaughter in the June 3rd slaying of 36-year-old Scott Hutton, who was shot through Salyers' front door. Salyers turned himself in to state troopers just last week. Saline County deputies were called at around 7:12 p.m. on June the 3rd to Salyers' home, where they found the mortally wounded Hutton lying on the ground outside the residence. The following day, the Alexander Police Department described the shooting as accidental. On a GoFundMe page set up by the department to help Hutton's widow, it stated he died in the line of duty. According to an arrest affidavit, Salyers had previously threatened to shoot protesters through his door. He made the statement in late May or early June when protests over the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers began to get violent. Salyers is accused of making the comments to Alexander Police Training Officer Sergeant Matt Wharton. It is unclear why Salyers thought protesters might show up at his home. Sergeant Wharton had instructed Officer Salyers that he could not do that because it was reckless and negligent. Wharton stated that they could not shoot anyone without identifying them first and identifying that there was a threat. So, why? Oh, why? Didn't Salyers heed any of these warnings? And why did he shoot a fellow police officer through his own front door? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0570. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0570. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.